I hold my finger on the bell for number 52 Wood Green Avenue for longer than is probably polite. The ringing is urgent, but that's good. I want them to know I'm in a rush. My Monday lunchtime shift at the ship starts in half an hour. I imagine Grace inside, her little owl face swivelling towards the noise in a way that makes her seem so much younger than most 17-year-olds. Her thin arms somehow manoeuvring her chair down the wide corridor towards me. Meg, in her uniform of slippers, leggings, and oversized t-shirt, padding behind her. A kindly, dependable guard dog. Just come in! I nudge my leg against the tote bag full of summer clothes, washed, ironed, and folded, ready for Meg and Grace. Mum and her friends have been collecting them for weeks. Come on! I take my phone out of the pocket of my ripped jeans, look at the blank screen and put it back again. The paint on the Nichols house is fresh and gives off a chemical tang in the early June sun. Naturally, they went for pink. Mum said the Wishmakers, the charity who adapted the house for Grace's wheelchair, repainted last month. Next door, the red paint on Mum's woodwork is peeling away like burnt skin. Where are they? I press the doorbell again. They're always in. Maybe Meg is helping Grace in the bathroom. Or perhaps they're in Grace's bedroom. Meg changing Grace's feeding tube. I think she has to change it every week. Last Christmas, Grace lifted her Santa Claus jumper to show me the new hole in her stomach. It looked like a tiny eye socket with the eyeball plucked out. It seemed bottomless. Grace, a doll with all her stuffing pulled out. Weird, isn't it? She said, looking straight at me. I shrugged and turned away so she couldn't see how queasy I felt. I glance at my phone again. Maybe I should just leave the bag here on the doorstep. I could write a note. But I know Mum will be pissed off if I don't give them the clothes in person. She's been saving them for me to bring over like it's a special treat. Mum visits Meg and Grace a couple of times a week, sometimes coming home dewy-eyed. It's as if, for her, spending half an hour with Meg and Grace is some kind of religious experience. She says Grace always asks her what I've been up to, if I've been dating, that kind of thing. Mum is always trying to get me to visit them. I tell her I've been too busy this year, retaking my A-levels, working at the pub and dealing with the breakup from Chris. I finished my exams 3 days ago, and I've run out of excuses, so here I am. The truth is, I never know what to say to Grace these days. It feels mean to tell her about my life, my plans for university, how I'm going to get out of Cornwall as soon as I can, that I'm saving for a big trip to India next year. When her big weekly event is a trip down the beach with her mum. I press my face to the mottled glass door. Although adapted for Grace's wheelchair, the layout of their bungalow is exactly the same as Mum's, and probably very similar to the other 100-and-something houses and bungalows on the Somervale estate. I can't see much. The glass makes everything look like it's underwater. My hand finds the door handle. Squeezes. The inside air greets me first. It's warm, foggy with Meg's air fresheners with names like summer days that make my nose itch. I know, because Mum buys the same ones. Hello? I call into the thick silence of their house. Meg? Grace? It's Cara. I've got those clothes. I stop as I turn into the sitting room. Everything is pristine as always. The beige three-piece suite is plump. The armchairs facing the sofa as though holding their own tea party. Polished photos of Meg and Grace, framed in hearts and stars, shine from the mantelpiece. But behind the sofa, my eye catches. Something is out of place. Something is there that shouldn't be. Grace? I move slowly, but fear comes quickly. Grace's wheelchair has fallen on its side. Her little toy rabbit and the heart-shaped cushion she sits on have skidded across the floor towards the kitchen.